Hey there, Rick Singeri of Vermont Edition. Just want you to know this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have you noticed that some people are driving much faster these days? There was a recent case on the interstate where a driver was stopped going 126 miles an hour. And incidents of road rage also appear to be on the rise, and also an increase in the number of people who use handheld cell phones and drivers who text. Can these issues be solved by enforcement efforts only, or does there need to be a massive education campaign launched to alert people about these dangers? You know, it's estimated that almost 40% of all adult drivers admit that they do drive and text, and the number for younger drivers is considerably higher. Well, what's going on our highways? What can we do to make our highways safety more safe? Those are some of the questions we have today for our guest, Allison LaFlamme, who is administrator of the State Highway Safety Office and the Behavioral Safety Unit, and Paul White, who is a law enforcement liaison for the State Highway Safety Office. Allison and Paul, great to have you on the program.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Your office deals with a lot of highway safety issues. We mentioned a bunch of them here in the introduction to the program. I'm just wondering, to start off, what stands out for you as representing one of the greatest dangers to the health and safety of Vermonters, drivers, and passengers on the state highways? Allison, what do you see as some of the most critical issues?
Well, we definitely see that speed and aggressive driving are a significant issue. And NHTSA, which is the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, which funds our program, they also agree that that is one of the top three priorities in the nation for fatalities causation. And so excessive speed is driving too fast for road conditions or faster than the posted speed limit, in addition to the extreme circumstance that you mentioned a few minutes ago.
And is it my perception, and is that perception right, that people are driving faster these days than perhaps 10 or 15 years ago?
Absolutely. We often have the conversation within the office about the horsepower that is produced. Years ago, 20, 30 years ago, cars were produced with the high speed of the horsepower around 300, and now cars are coming off the line, the race to 1,000. So cars are moving faster on the roadway. The base model cars are moving faster. It's not the higher end. So we're definitely seeing speed as an issue.
I wonder if people are driving faster also because cars seem to be quieter, so they might not know. I remember I had a car once that if I went above 65, it started to rattle a little
bit.
So I always knew I had a built-in radar detector for the car. But sometimes with new cars being so quiet, you start sneaking up in speed and aren't quite aware of what you're doing.
Not only...
Yeah, you're right. They're quieter. They're engineered to have a smoother ride. You know, our roads are continually improving. So, you know, the roads 50 years ago, although you may complain about potholes today, they're a far cry better than they were 50 years ago. So, yeah, all of those things contribute to, not to mention, you know, the whole change in society. You know, we're now an instant gratification society where we want to be there 5 minutes ago, and we don't want to waste all that time of driving. So I can send a few quick texts while I'm driving, and just that whole mentality of go, go, go all the time now.
And do you think, Paul, it's also a matter of people feeling like driving is kind of downtime from work, and I've got to get more work done. So,
absolutely,
as you were saying, if I can get there 5 or 10 minutes earlier, then somehow I've made myself more productive in
absolutely
terms of work.
Absolutely. You know, there is really no good reason, but yet people seem to think that, you know, I've got to be there. I've got to be there 5 minutes ago.
And I haven't done the math on it exactly, but if someone was driving from Montpelier to Burlington and they were going 65 miles an hour or they were going 80, it's a matter of minutes in time.
Yes.
You know, you think, well, I'm going to just drive real quick because I'm going to be late for this meeting, but you really aren't going to make up
that
much time.
You get there 3 minutes faster.
Yeah.
Today on the program, we are looking at highway safety issues. We're talking about speeding on the interstate, also on local roads as well. What's been your experience? What do you see out there? Also, distracted driving. Do you see examples of people using cell phones? Sometimes there are people reading out there. We had a case a few years ago of someone playing a musical instrument while they were driving. Wondering what you've seen out on the highways? Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. We'd love to know what you're seeing on highways and what you think can be done about it. How are we going to educate people about different behaviors, especially some of the more aggressive behaviors that we see people doing while they're operating a vehicle? Paul, we were talking about speed. You know, it's so easy now to be doing 70 in the right lane and somebody comes flying behind you. It seems like this is happening more and more on Vermont highways.
It's been creeping up on us for a long time, but you're right. It's my experience in law enforcement is with the state police, but it happens regardless. You know, having patrolled I-89 for a number of years, I said years ago we've lost control of that interstate. It's the speeds are just ever increasing, and it's certainly not all out of state plates, but it's certainly frustrating on a Friday afternoon in ski season when, you know, like you say, you're driving in the right lane at or near the speed limit, and it's just a constant stream of white plates passing you on the left.
Also, Allison, a very tragic issue is work zones, construction zones. People need to slow down in these zones. Usually it's 55 miles an hour, at least on the interstate, slower on other state roads. But we had a case recently of a flagger being killed on the highway. And we got this email from Daniel in Sheffield. As a road construction flagger, I witness a lot of distracted driving every day, and these vehicles are usually only a few feet from me. Drivers should be alert. There are plenty of signs warning drivers ahead, yet people often say they don't see them. Please slow down and put the phone down, too. I see dozens of people talking or texting in a work zone every day. Finally, Daniel writes, thank you to the many drivers who do slow down, pay attention, and keep us all safe. That's a very serious issue out there.
Yes, it is. And as a Vermont Agency of Transportation employee, these are my coworkers who are out there working in the field, and they are incredibly vulnerable. They have no defense against these motor vehicles that are coming up on them very, very quickly. And we want to be sure that they are protected as much as possible. And it starts with all of us. All of us on the roadway are responsible for slowing down. That's the very first countermeasure that we talk about in our office. For work zone safety. And we have added extra enforcement throughout the state. And we have teams that we are going to continue building because of this issue. We want to be sure that we reduce. We've had 28 traffic-related crashes in work zones this year. And overall, nationally, about, don't want to misquote this, approximately 800 people lose their lives each year. So in work zones, and that's not only the employees, but the people in vehicles as well, or pedestrians moving through those work zones. So we want to make sure that these are people out there who are working, who just want to get home at the end of the day, and their moms, their dads, their sisters, brothers, are community members. And definitely it's not only the phone, it's all distractions. You don't need to, you know, flip the radio station or eat or do all those things. Pay attention to the kids in the back seat. Concentrate on driving and just drive through those work zones and give these folks an opportunity to get home safe each night.
Do you think it's a case of the drivers not seeing the signs saying you're entering a work zone, which is usually you get a couple of miles ahead of time, work zone coming up and in 2 miles, 1 mile, half a mile. Do you think it's a case of that they don't see the signs, or are they so much in their own world and doing and perhaps being distracted that the signs are there, they just don't see them?
It could be that they missed the initial warning signs, because we work very hard to make sure that those are in place before the work zone is in process.
We're talking about construction zones and the importance, Allison, of paying attention. Do you think that some drivers, you know, they go through a construction zone, they don't see any construction taking place sometimes, so they're thinking, these rules only apply when there's construction going on. It doesn't apply to me now.
Right, and that could definitely happen. There are certain hours. There are variable message boards lit throughout the state that talk about the hours that the action will be taking place, when the work will be taking place, and the days, the start days and end days. So VTRAN's also very active in putting out on social media updates, daily updates or extension updates, to help drivers out and get that information out about when the actual activity will be taking place. But
and Paul, I'm wondering, in this case, and maybe lots of other cases with highway safety, you know, there's some hefty fines involved and points on people's licenses. Do you think that the penalties are sufficient? Is that what's going to get people's attention? Or is that only part of the solution and more of a public education campaign needs to be engaged in?
Well, it definitely is. The financial penalty is only part of the solution. And I do think that the fines are sufficient. And actually, in some cases, not, you know, work zone fines, I don't know if we mentioned that typically the fine for speeding or some dangerous activity in a work zone is doubled what it would normally be on a normal stretch of highway. Sometimes, believe it or not, the problem we run into is the fines get to be so high that police officers are reluctant to issue those tickets. You know, it's tough to hand a ticket out to somebody for $1,000 on the side of the road when the human factor kicks in.
And I saw a case the other day because I'm on the state police press release list of someone who was doing 85 or 90 in a construction zone. It was a sizable fine. I think it was over $1,000.
They can be, right. Typically, the faster you're going, the higher the fine to begin with. And then if you double it for being a work zone, then it makes it that much higher. When the situation you mentioned where the work zone signs are in place, but there's no activity that appears to be going on, that is a particularly troublesome situation because you're right. People, particularly people that drive the same road every day, you know, they kind of tend to know when the work is really taking place and when it's not. And people take liberties with those work zones, even though if those signs are up, the speed limit is in effect whether you see workers there or not.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today we're looking at highway safety issues. With us today, Paul White, who is the law enforcement liaison for the state highway safety program. And also Allison LaFlam, who is the administrator of the state office as well in the behavioral safety unit. Let's talk to Jim in Fairfield. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Great. What's on your mind, Jim?
So basically, I live outside St. Albans, and I frequently drive down to southern Vermont. And on my one trip back, I noticed a cop riding in the center of both lanes on the dotted line and going maybe 30 miles an hour with clear highway in front of him and like a mile of traffic backed up behind him. And my fiance has also experienced this with the cop coming up behind her and her pulling off on the road thinking she was going to be pulled over. And then it took her like 10 minutes to get back on the road because there was such a, you know, congested traffic behind her. I was just wondering if the guests today knew, like, have any comment on this, basically, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Paul?
Well, you know, I don't know for sure when and where this happened, but what it sounds like you're describing is over these last few years, there have been some pretty significant construction projects, you know, bridge replacements and whatnot on the interstate that have involved blasting, ledge removal, and things like that. And they have been doing some what they call rolling roadblocks. So they intentionally slow traffic down. The police officer, like you described, drives slowly with all their lights on to hold traffic back As opposed to doing a full stoppage of traffic. So they slow everybody down, which creates this gap of several minutes where it's safe for, you know, whether they need to move a steel girder into place or whether they need to set off a dynamite shot to blast some ledge. By rather than completely stopping traffic, they do these rolling roadblocks, which just creates just enough of a window for them to do what they need to do on the highway and then let traffic through again.
Let's talk to Kevin, who's calling from Barry. Hi, Kevin. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for taking me. I pulled off the road and got into parking to make this call. I just wanted to share a couple of things. One is I definitely agree with the comments that the average speed has increased. I would estimate if you're doing 70 or 75, you're going slow now on the interstate. I commute between the Randolph area and Montpelier, and 80 is the average speed of higher. Second is trucks are contributing as well, which is sort of dangerous. 18-wheelers are going just as fast. Third, people tend to slam on their brakes at the little sections of crossing the highway. So they'll be doing 80 or 85 or 90, and you see these brake lights where they think there might be a state police there. My recommendation is they increase tickets. And fourth and finally, I have some observations, if you have any time, about what I've seen people doing when I stopped to assist someone on the road who had broken down and was just shocked at what I saw about what people were doing in their car as they drove by. Thank you.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Allison, no doubt people are speeding. And as Kevin mentioned, sometimes it's truckers going by. And I often see this in bad weather conditions, I think, more than any time else, either during a snowstorm or during a heavy rainstorm. And a big truck comes up the highway and either throws an enormous amount of snow onto your windshield as they pass by, or a whole bunch of rain, which really limits your visibility for 5 or 10 seconds.
Sure. And going back to driver's education, the road's always slipperiest when it first starts to rain. And it's something that we all need to recognize when the rain's coming down or it's nice or snowstorm, that 65 may not be the posted speed limit at that time. We may need to slow down, take our time, drive at a slower speed, and get there safely.
Paul, I've heard that a lot from members of the state police, that exactly what Allison just said, is that people don't adjust their driving habits, their speed, based on the weather conditions on the road.
Very true. And, you know, people need to bear in mind that the posted speed limit is the maximum, which, you know, is really designed for a nice, dry, sunny day in June. That's not intended to be the speed limit when it's, you know, snowing or raining or, you know, 20 below. And as far as the comments about the trucks, I've observed that myself, and I've talked to a lot of truck drivers over the years, and many of them are of the opinion that it, you know, their vehicle is heavier, so it gives them better traction, or they sit higher off the road, so they have better visibility. But the problem, as we saw yesterday, is when things go bad with those big rigs, they go really bad.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Scott, who's calling from Middlebury. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a comment and a question. My comment is that I feel driver education is inadequate to train people to drive properly. And my question is, how can it be justified that giving a 16-year-old who's proven that they're an adequate driver to pass the test, to give that driver a license and then not have any follow-up testing for maybe 70 years of driving that's to come?
Paul?
Excellent point. I'm not aware of any state that does the follow-up testing that you're talking about, and that is definitely something we can look into. You know, what you just mentioned sort of brought to mind a sort of an alarming trend that we're seeing is anybody who has teenagers or has had teenagers realizes that getting your child enrolled in driver's ed is not as simple as it used to be. There's just not enough driver educators, not enough slots in the public driver ed classes. And if you can't afford to do private driver ed, we're seeing an alarming number of kids who are, you know, there's not, when I was 16, I couldn't wait to get my license, but there is more of a willingness now on teenagers' parts to just put off getting their license until they turn 18. And once you're 18, there's no longer a requirement that you take driver's ed at all. And we're seeing more and more of that happening. And there has been an attempt to get legislative change made so that even after you turn 18, you can't get your license without taking some form of driver education class. But as it stands right now, once you turn 18, it's not required.
Let's talk to Rob, who is calling from Essex Junction. Hey, Rob, what's on your mind today?
Well, I've got a comment or two for you. I've been thinking a lot about the road transportation, and I agree with the last couple of callers you had. It seems like it comes down to the driver. I see these construction zones, and I see them for miles in advance before I get through them. And I'm talking freeways or on side roads. I just went through the Williston construction, and it was everywhere. There was no lack of letting you know what's happening. So I feel like it comes down to reminding drivers at a base education level that they need to be aware of their surroundings when they're operating this 3,000-pound machine. It's not just, you know, we let it slip through our mind that this is just an everyday action. We're constantly driving, and we get comfortable, and we don't realize just that quickly and how easily everything can turn badly because we look down at a phone or a sound or anything, our coffee spilled, and it can really cost, you know, the ultimate price there for a lot of our workers on the roads. So I feel like we should really try to reach out to people more than just as they're getting their license, but when they renew. I mean, it's hard to test, and it's expensive. It would be wildly expensive to require people to come back and do, you know, new testing and all these things where they're making sure that they don't have, you know, a lack of knowledge on driving on the roads, but it's something that needs to be done. There's something that needs to change because we're going to continue to see these deaths of not only construction workers, but officers as well.
Rob, thanks very much for your phone call. Allison, one other thing I was thinking about in terms of distracted driving, and I do want to spend a little bit of time dealing with texting and handheld cell phones, but I'm also wondering what your thoughts are. A lot of these new cars have computer touch screens. To operate all sorts of things in the car. And, you know, if you're trying to, put something on or change something, you can take your eyes off the road and onto that touch screen. It could be 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds. Is that a concern of yours?
It sure is. And when you take your eyes off the road for that length of time, you're traveling basically the length of a football field or longer, depending on your speed, and to have your eyes off the road for that long, it can be deadly. And so, absolutely, I agree with the last caller, too, when it comes to their comments about it being an individual responsibility. It's something that we see over and over again in speed and distracted driving studies. That when you're in the car, you become isolated and you think that you're the only one out there, and you forget that there are other human beings in all those other vehicles. And so absolutely that we need to remember that there's other people, and it's a responsibility for all of us.
Today in the program, we're looking at highway safety, speeding on the interstate and local roads, distracted driving. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. If you've got some examples you'd like to share with us, we'd love to hear from you today at 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk about distracted driving and texting. And despite a Vermont law that bans the use of handheld electronic devices, there are indications that many people are still texting while driving. There was a recent study, a national study, that indicated that 40% of adult drivers admit to texting while operating a vehicle. And there have got to be some who do text but didn't admit it. The percentage is even higher for younger drivers. I mean, when you consider that texting while driving is 6 times more likely to cause an accident than someone who is driving drunk, that's a remarkable statistic to me. And the average time for someone who is texting is about 5 seconds. So imagine yourself driving down the highway and closing your eyes for 5 seconds. How do you feel about that? How safe do you feel with that going on? Paul, how does law enforcement, how does highway safety approach this issue of texting? You've got folks who think, hey, I can do it. I know other people can't do it, and that's good that we have a law that says they can't do it. But I can do it, so there's really not a problem here.
You're right. It's a very tough thing. And like you mentioned, you know, I'm sure there are more than 40% of the people that text while driving.
Really?
But if you ask people, you know, it's strange. If you ask the average person on the street what they think about it, they'll say, yeah, texting while driving is bad. You shouldn't do it. But if you turn around and ask them, well, do you do it? 40% of them will say, yes, I do. So it's a struggle, and it's, you know, and it's a difficult thing. We've all seen it where the person has their phone either down in their lap or just below the windshield line. And it's a difficult thing for law enforcement to take action on. Sometimes it's very flagrant and you can see it and it's easy, but there are other times where it's tough to really prove, you know, once by the time you pull the car over, walk up to the window, of course, the cell phone's been put away and nobody's going to admit to texting while driving. But, you know, frequently we've all seen it following a car down the road where they're weaving all over and you think, well, either they're drunk or they're texting, one or the other. And it's a challenge.
Allison, it is tough for law enforcement, as Paul mentioned. You know, you've got to see somebody in the act of either having a cell phone up to their ear or somehow being looks like they're looking down below the steering wheel and doing something. I know when this issue was debated at the legislature, there were some people who said, hey, this is just not enforceable.
It is very difficult, but our enforcement agencies are finding new ways to try to figure out if someone is on their telephone. For example, they might stand on a bridge and look down on the roadway to see if someone is using their phone and then radio ahead to another police officer. Or they might be using municipal vehicles, larger vehicles, or buses. We've had them work with Chittenden County Transportation Authority to have state police on those buses because they can see a little bit higher and perform enforcement.
Paul, when I mentioned that 40% number, you said you think it's even higher.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Really?
If you stand out here on State Street and just watch the cars go by, I would bet 8 out of 10 people are either talking on their phone or texting.
And it's just a fact of life that how do you get to these people?
That's an awesome question. You know, that's we need somehow we've got to change the mindset that it's okay. You know, I think in Europe, I'm sure it's probably a problem everywhere. But in Europe, I don't think that they have the problem that we have. It's just sort of ingrained in our society here that it's part of what we do.
Let's go back to our callers and let's talk to Louie, who's calling from Irisburg. Hey, Louie, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I think that they can control. I honestly think that they can control the speeding by them solar speed signs. Because I know when I come into a town, if I'm coming in at 40 miles an hour and it says 35 miles an hour, that thing lights right up and the light turns blue and that shuts me right down as far as to 35, right where I'm supposed to be. And I think that they ought to have the same identical thing on the interstate every 5 miles or so on each side if they have to, and all solar operated to do that on the interstate, because that, I know that stops me and that stops a lot of other people I've talked to. And I think that's the way to go. And as far as texting driving, well, you have to pay the penalty if you get caught texting. That's the way it is, I guess, because you're not going to, I mean, there isn't nothing that's going to stop you from texting unless you get a ticket. And another ticket.
All right, Louie, that's you've got some very good ideas. Allison, I'm wondering how effective you think those signs are that Louie's talking about. We had a neighborhood here in Montpelier that lobbied the city council to lower the speed limit in their neighborhood from 35 to 30 miles an hour on a main thoroughfare leaving the city. And I noticed right after that speed change went into effect, one of those signs went up saying speed limit is 30. You are going whatever. And if you were doing more than 30, it was flashing at you. Do you think those are effective?
We do. And the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration that funds our program, we give out equipment money to support our enforcement programs, and they put up these signs in various towns so that it is a behavior change piece of equipment that when you see how fast you're going, it's a double check to say, hey, I don't want to be going this fast. I need to slow down. Everybody can see it behind me. And who knows, there could be an officer ahead as well. And hopefully it does lead to multiple people changing behavior instead of just getting a ticket.
Let's talk to Joe, who's calling from Bridport. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I wanted to say that I think way more effective than the big emphasis on speed we have here would be advanced driver training. You talk about Europe probably not having the problem we have here with distracted driving. If you take an advanced driver training course, I have not taken one since the distracted driving has become such an issue, but they certainly did hammer home the issue of driving while drinking or after drinking. I spent years in Europe. I traveled the roads of Great Britain at speeds up to 150 miles an hour. I never once saw an accident nor skid marks on the high-speed roads. A lot of it was the advanced driver training. They had better handling cars. They had better signage. They had better designed roads and whatever. But I really think that would make a huge difference. And I would imagine now they have a pretty strong message in the advanced driver training to stay off your damn cell phone.
All right. That's okay, Joe. We appreciate your phone call. Today we're looking at highway safety issues. With us today, two members of the State Highway Safety Office, Paul White, who is the law enforcement liaison, and also Allison LaFlamme, who is the administrator of the office. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Elaine, who's calling from Winooski. Hi, Elaine. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to talk a little bit about people in all-wheel drive and four-wheel drive vehicles. I drive a four-cylinder fuel-efficient car, and I have to say, and especially in bad weather, I feel very intimidated by their road arrogance. It's like kind of like road rage, but it's much more like intimidating. I feel unsafe on especially snowy and icy roads. These people go way too fast. I think they feel overconfident that because they have four wheels that spinning, that they're going to be, you know, more safer than I am. But my philosophy is four-wheel spinning on ice is just as dangerous as any other, as two-wheel spinning on ice. So the other thing I did want to mention is I do wave to flaggers as I go through a construction area just so they know that I see them. And so that, you know, I don't expect them to wave back, but I want them to know I'm acknowledging them and making sure that, you know, I'm trying to be safe about going through. Thank you for listening to me.
All right, Elaine, thanks very much for your phone calls. Allison, I've heard this from a number of people. It sort of gets back to the discussion we were having earlier about people adjusting their driving habits to the different road conditions. But Elaine is right. There are people who get in a four-wheel drive vehicle, even though there's a bunch of snow, and they think they're fine. They can go as fast as they were doing before.
Absolutely. And it's something that the agency, several state agencies, work together, and they have a winter driving message each late fall, early winter time, where we talk about proper tires, the extra braking distance, having things in your vehicle in case you go off the road from blankets and water and batteries and a shovel and sand and things like of that nature. So absolutely, your driving behaviors need to be modified for the winter time to adjust for those slippery conditions.
Let's talk to Gary, who's calling from Richmond. Hi, Gary. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'm in my car on a hands-free phone, and I just wanted to say that there's a lot of talk about how technology is a problem and everybody's looking at their phones, but I'd like to suggest that technology can also be part of the solution. Now, people are driving 100 miles an hour on the highway. We're very limited by the number of police that can be patrolling. But, you know, they have these devices that can be put on the side of the highway, and if somebody's going 100 miles an hour, it can send them a ticket in the mail for a lot less cost than paying a police officer to be driving around. And there's other ways that technology could help us. For example, our phones actually know what the speed limit is on whenever we're driving around, and it also knows how fast we're going. And somebody could develop an app to beep at us when we're speeding. Or, you know, the insurance companies could give us a break if we install such an app. So I think that technology is a foe, but it's also a friend, and it could be a way to help keep the roads safer.
All right, Gary, thank you very much for your phone call. Paul, we're starting to see this in some areas or some insurance companies. I'm not technologically sure exactly what they do, but they advertise that they're putting some sort of gizmo in your car, and they can tell how fast you're going and braking and things like that. Would that be helpful going forward?
Yeah, Gary hit it right on the head that, you know, we talk about all this technology, but technology in the future is what may be the cure for the very things that we're talking about. What you're talking about, Bob, is I did it with my cars. Your insurance company will send you this little plug that plugs into the onboard diagnostics port of your car. It monitors your driving for, you know, I forget, 60 days, 90 days, and it's in constant communication with your insurance company. It tracks how many hard stops, how many sudden accelerations, how many hours you spend driving in the middle of the night, how many times you exceed the speed limit, because, as he mentioned, you know, these apps all know the speed limit. And then based on your driving habits, it affects your insurance rates. And that's certainly a way to slow people down, is to hit them in the pocketbook. The other thing he was talking about was what we call automated speed enforcement. And that is something that actually is being actively talked about. You see them, you don't see them in Vermont, but you see them in Canada. I think the nearest states that do it are Pennsylvania and Maryland. But it's you know, it's kind of like in the cities, they have red light cameras. These are speed cameras. You drive through the zone, it clocks you on radar, it takes a picture of your license plate. A few days later, you get a ticket in the mail. That's not something that we can do in Vermont presently legally. We don't have the legislative authority to do that. But it is something that's being discussed. And from everything that I've read, they actually are highly effective at slowing people down.
You know, I was recently in Washington, D.C., and taking a cab ride to the other side of town. And the driver pointed out to me a particular road. He said, "Do you see those signs? Do you see those cameras? These things are set at 35 miles an hour. And if I do above 40, it's going to take my picture and give me a ticket." So it was right. Very effective for him.
And they're, I mean, and it's not done sneakily or on the sly or anything. They're very well publicized. They're very well signed. Everybody that drives through knows they're driving through that zone, but yet they do it just the same.
Let's talk to Chris, who's calling from Fayston. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I just wanted to reiterate, I think this is a great topic that you have brought up, and I just wanted to reiterate to all the listeners how important it is to use, you know, the common courtesies that have been put in place, at least that my parents and my driver's ed taught me, you know, and that's, it's also especially well known in Europe. I know another caller was talking about European drivers, and, you know, staying right on the interstate is really important. If you aren't passing or making a move, to stay in the right lane and use your cruise control. A lot of cars nowadays have cruise control. I love my cruise control. It's great for my gas mileage. It keeps me safe, especially my newer vehicles got the adaptive cruise control. I think that if we all kind of use that common courtesy stuff on the interstate, we would all have a much safer experience, you know, especially if somebody does want to speed and blow by me in the left-hand lane, I know I'm doing a safe speed in the right-hand lane and out of his way. Thank you very much, and have a great day.
All right, Chris, we appreciate your phone call. Allison, one thing we really haven't touched on too much now today is aggressive driving. You know, people who are going much faster, who are basically honking their horn, telling people to get out of the way. We seem to be seeing more of that these days, and how people should be reacting to that. Do you see that as a growing problem?
We do, although we don't have specific data that defines it like we do with speed, because we can capture that information on a crash report. Aggressive driving is a little more anecdotal, but we do see it. We see people in a hurry, passing on the right, going around a car just to get by, honking, as you said. So we do see aggression. We've had situations where, in St. Albans, I believe it was, a few years back, an aggressive driver situation turned deadly. So it can escalate pretty quickly when it comes to aggressive driving. And it's something that we all need to, going back to what I said earlier, remember that there are other people out there and keeping ourselves in check.
Paul, I'm wondering your thoughts. You know, we're reading more and more about self-driving cars these days. Maybe 5 or 10 years from now, if we're having this conversation, it'll be a very common occurrence. Do you think, is that a good thing, or are there maybe some problems with this?
There's both. I like to drive. A lot of us love to drive. And the thought of giving up our ability to drive and turning that over to a computer just scares the heck out of some of us. But as one of the previous callers mentioned, you know, that technology is going to be what solves many of these problems, because when human beings are no longer driving these cars and the car is programmed to not exceed 65 miles per hour, we won't have a speeding problem. Granted, it's going to take many, many years before all of the current cars that we're accustomed to are out of the system, off the road, and we're a system, a society of only automated vehicles is many years, more than 5 or 10 years down the road. But once you take the human factor out of it, many of these behaviors will go away.
I'm wondering if people are going to be able to trust that technology. We just saw a story in the last week or so of you do have a braking device on some newer cars, and sometimes it inadvertently goes off and the car starts braking when that's the last thing you want it to do.
Right.
Maybe that's the development of this technology.
It's a huge leap that we have to make for that to happen.
Well, it's been a fascinating discussion of highway safety issues. Everyone sees people speeding on the interstate and distracted driving, and we're hoping that everybody has a very safe holiday weekend, and that if you are guilty of some of these infractions, that you'll rethink about them. And it sounds like an educational campaign, Allison, would be one of the best ways to get to people to realize the importance of this.
You can reach us at the Vermont Agency of Transportation, State Highway Safety Office, Behavioral Safety Unit. Our numbers and we're right listed on their website. And so you can reach out to us at any time, and we'd be happy to answer your questions.
And we'll be sure to put that information on our website as well for folks. Many thanks to the two of you for being on the program, Allison and Paul. We really appreciate you coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you.